So today we are starting a new series looking at the life of somebody named King David. It probably comes as no surprise the person who's mentioned the most in the Bible is Jesus, right? Who is mentioned the next most after that? It is this guy named David. And what we're going to discover, not only is his story true, because we might think, well, you know, King Arthur, you know, and there are these king stories that are around there. King Arthur is fictional. King David is true. And not only are we going to find that it's true, we're going to find that it's relevant to a day like this. But just before we jump into the message for today, I want to just reiterate something we mentioned last week, and many of you responded already, but we just want to make sure everybody has the information on that. There's something that we are growing and enlarging here at Washington Heights, and you're invited maybe to help make it happen, but also maybe there's some needs that can be met through that. And we're expanding our care ministry in all of these ways that you see up there. And last week, we invited you to respond to that. Many of you did. Thank you so much for that. You can still do that through that connection card that's in front of you. But here's the other thing that I didn't mention last week, that if you have a need or you're aware of a need, let us know, because, you know, sometimes it's just hard to match those two things up. And we just want to do a better and better job of just, you know, recognizing and meeting the needs that we are able to meet in God's name. And so maybe you want to be a part of helping make the ministry happen. Maybe you have a need. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. So let's turn to the message for today, finding hope in times of chaos. And what we're going to do today is really look at the prelude, look at the setup for the story of King David, because we're going to look at the time right before he comes on the scene. And what we're going to find in David's story, there are going to be sword fights, and there's going to be giants, and there's going to be armies, and there's going to be commanders, and all these kind of manly things. You know what we're going to see in the prelude? We're going to meet a woman who sings a song that sets the stage in so many ways for all that is to come. And sometimes we might look at the stories in the Bible and say, you know what, it was so easy back then, and they had everything going on, and those people lived on a pedestal, and everything, you know, was just kind of served up to them. That would be a mistake on our part. And so here's what I want to start with in the story of King David. What comes before him? Let's look at the historical context, because I got to tell you, the times were chaotic. There's a book written by Eric Klein. It's called 1177 BC, The Year Civilization Collapsed. Now, that's referred to by historians as the Late Bronze Age, and there were all these thriving empires and cultures around the Mediterranean region, and there were ideas being developed, mathematics was being advanced, all kinds of new creations and inventions, there was trade, there was widespread peace that was happening, and then in a very short amount of time, that came to an end. And so from a time of great peace, immediately followed one generation where all of that disappeared. And here's one quote: the thriving cultures of the late second millennium BC, which stretched from Greece to Egypt and Mesopotamia, suddenly ceased to exist. Long used trade routes were abandoned, along with writing systems, advanced technology, and monumental architecture. And some of the empires that vanished, how familiar are you with these? The Minoans, the Mycenaeans, and the Hittites. And if you don't know who they are, that just proves the point. That there were these movers and shakers of those days, and all of a sudden, they were gone. And one of history's mysteries asks the question, why? Why did that happen? Why did it go from so much positivity to so much chaos and so much collapse? And really, the best guess at this point, and nobody can be 100% certain, is something called climate change. And they actually did soil samples, and they discovered that in that time period, it was the driest time in 2,000 years of world history. And so what happened on the other side of that was famine, and famine produced all this conflict and warfare, and all these empires just sort of, through attrition, demolished one another. Even the ones that we're familiar with, like ancient Egypt, which was incredible at one point in time, was a shell of its former self on the other side of this, even though it endured. Here's another quote. By 1100 BC, this whole world and all its splendors were gone. And it's in that context that the story of King David begins. But here's why we talk about all of that. Because it was chaos. And I wonder if in our day, right, we come through a pandemic, there's inflation right now, and they're talking about recession, and there seems to be unending warfare that happens in terrorism and all the other things that mark our day. And it's so easy for us to look at this moment in which we find ourselves, and we may wonder, where is the hope in the middle of all of that? Well, right before King David comes on the scene, here's the last verse of the book that just precedes his time. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. In a time of chaos, you know what people did? It's every man, woman, and child for themselves. So there's no empires with safety. Imagine more just family units and communities trying to struggle and survive in times that have been so much more difficult than those that preceded them. And that's the context. And I think it's easy for us to ask this question in the middle of times like that. Where is the hope in a world full of chaos? Where are we supposed to look? What are we supposed to do? Well, enter onto the scene everything that precedes King David, who's just about to arrive. 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 1, there was a certain man whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jehoram. He had two wives. Now, sometimes people will say things like this. See, the Bible promotes polygamy. It does not promote polygamy. It tells it the way it is. It tells us that it was there, and every time you see it in the Bible, it is never a good experience. So the Bible is not giving thumbs up to that, but it just says that it's there, and that's all we're going to comment on that. The name of the one wife was Hannah, and the name of the other was Peniah. And Peniah had children, but Hannah had no children. Now, why would they even point that out? Why is that even worth mentioning? Because in a time of chaos, more children amounts to survival. If you have more children, you have more chance for income. You have more opportunity to stay ahead in a time where it was so hard to have anything. And so it creates this inequity, and there's a difference between these two wives. Now notice what happens. Now this man used to go up year by year from his city to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts at Shiloh. This is Elkanah, where the two sons of Eli, he's the priest, his sons are named Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of the Lord. Now you're starting out with the story of these two wives and this guy. Why do you even mention this? It seems like an unnecessary detour around that story. Hophni and Phinehas, those two names have very specific meanings. Hophni means pugilist. Pugilist, another word for a fighter, a boxer. And Phinehas means mouth of brass. Here's another way to put that. Hophni means bully, and Phinehas means loudmouth. And what they're trying to tell us is, you know what time this is? This is the time of the bullies and the loudmouths. And they're the ones who are holding sway. And in a time of chaos, those are the voices that are often the loudest. And in that context, we meet this woman, Hannah. And Hannah's rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. So in other words, the other wife who's got all these children is saying to the wife who doesn't have any children, she's letting her know about it. And I'm fulfilling my responsibility. I'm meeting the expectation of what is supposed to happen in this culture. And you are not. And so it went year by year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. Therefore, Hannah wept and would not eat. Can you feel the pressure that's on Hannah? She's not meeting the expectations that there are for her. Can you believe that there was a day when a woman's value gets reduced by the pressures of culture? And that people would look down on a woman because she did not have any children, right? What an archaic, outdated, you know, just silly way to live our lives, right? We are so much better than that, are we not? No, I'm not so sure about that. Are there any pressures in our day? Are there any pressures on what it means to be a woman? And really, this whole issue can apply to either gender, right? A woman or a guy. But specifically here, this is a pressure that's placed on a woman. And what we discover on the Shape magazine is that, ladies, you need flat abs, lean legs, and a firm butt. You know, otherwise, you know, culture may, you know, judge you because you're not matching up. Are we doing better? I think in many ways we're doing worse than they did back in 1100 BC. Oh, and by the way, get on the zero belly diet. I mean, I don't know how you have zero belly, but apparently you can do that. I would have put, you know, this is on Shape magazine. Purely, I was researching for this message. That's the only reason I was looking at. And I was going to put the image from the cover up there, but it wouldn't be appropriate to show it in church. And it's so unrealistic. But here's why we say this. The voice of Peninnah, the wife who's got all the kids, it's still speaking, but it speaks a little bit differently today. How about social media? Do we have any issues with that? How Instagram harms young women, according to research Forbes magazine just last year. Eating disorder, risk increase, depression, lower self-esteem, appearance anxiety, body dissatisfaction, social media use, increased desire for cosmetic surgery, a drive for thinness increased with Instagram use. Those who compare themselves are at greater risk. Suicidal thoughts linked to social media use. Is the voice of Peninnah still speaking? Of this is who you need to be, and this is the expectation that you need to fill. And what are we to do in response to voices like that? And Elkanah, her husband, Hannah's husband, said to her, "Hannah, why do you weep and why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons?" Basically, this is a clueless husband who goes, "Yeah, you don't have any kids, but you got me. And isn't that better than all of that?" And the implication is, no, it's not. Typical clueless guy on this day here. But here are the two voices that are speaking to Hannah. And this comes from one of the top Hebrew scholars. His name is Robert Alter. And he says, in Hannah's story, you hear these two voices. One is the voice of social approval. Here's the expectation you need to meet. And the other one is male affection. That isn't it more important to you that I would care about you and desire you? Isn't that even better? What's interesting and what Robert Alter points out in this story is that Hannah does not answer either voice. She doesn't say, "Yep, I'm going to pursue that," or "Yep, I'm going to pursue that." Hannah teaches us something really important. To refuse the voices that tempt us to base our self-worth on the expectation of others or the affection of others. And those two voices still speak, and I think they speak maybe louder than ever. And we have them in front of us every day. And the challenge that we have in this day is we may wonder, yeah, but what other alternatives do I have? And in a time where there is so much uncertainty and maybe even so much chaos, how do you find hope in the middle of that? And when that's what you're around every day and those are the voices that you hear. But here's what Hannah tells us. You know what? The hope is not found there. And you can chase those voices for the rest of your lives and you will never find the hope for which we search. Well, then where else do we go? After they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. And we look at that and we go, okay, well, that's just a sentence and tells us Hannah got up. That's actually a Hebrew idiom. An idiom is a figure of speech, and we don't use that one, but we use them. Let me give you one example. When we say somebody put their foot down, what do we mean? It's not that their foot was in the air and they put it down literally. We mean they made a decision. They said no. They made a commitment. This is a way of saying Hannah made a decision. Hannah got up. Hannah took into her control the things that she could control. Hannah gets on her way. Now, where does she go? Right? These voices are speaking to her. Where is she going to go? She goes to the temple. Now, Eli, the priest, was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord, and she was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. Deeply distressed can literally mean pain of the soul. And I believe that there are plenty of people who know what that feels like. We're talking bone marrow kind of pain. And so where does she go? She goes to the temple and she's going to pray to God. But pain proves to be the turning point for her. Some people have said, you know what, we're content to stay where we are until the pain of staying where we are just becomes, you know, even more so than making the change. That can often be so hard. It changes her. As she continued praying before the Lord, Eli, the priest, observed her mouth. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved, and her voice was not heard. So lips are moving, not any sound. Therefore, Eli took her to be a drunken woman. Can I just say, clergy are not always the brightest bulb in the pack, okay? And this is the guy who's over that and observing, and that's his conclusion. Eli said to her, "How long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away." But Hannah answered him, "No, my Lord, I'm a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I've been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for all along I've been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation." So, hey, you know, I think you're a troublemaker. No, I'm not a troublemaker. I'm just really hurting. And it's been really hard. Now, if somebody said that to you, what would be maybe the next right thing to say? Maybe say, well, what's happening? What's going on, right? You would expect that there would be some kind of good response. Eli said, "Go in peace. And the God of Israel grant your petition that you've made to him." In other words, he says, have a good one. We'll see ya. It seems like almost clergy malpractice there as he does not respond in a way that even is right and fitting with that moment. But then Hannah prays the prayer, and she prays a prayer asking God for a son. And she says, "If you grant me a son, I will dedicate him to you." And it sounds like what she's doing is negotiating with God, but that's not what it's teaching us. And commentators say that for the first time in Hannah's life, to have a son would have been for all the right reasons. Not the cultural reasons, not the expectation reasons, but for all the right reasons. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her, and in due time Hannah conceived and bore a son. And she called his name Samuel, for she said, "I have asked for him from the Lord." And then you fade a couple years later, and she is now going to dedicate this son to God. And so she goes to the temple again, and Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exalts in the Lord, my strength is exalted in the Lord, my mouth derides my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is none holy like the Lord, there is none beside you, there is no rock like our God." What is she saying on that day? She's had these other voices. She has tapped into a different voice. Not the voice of culture, not the voice of affection, of the people that can be impossible to please around her. Instead, now she is leaning into the voice of God. In the Old Testament, over and over again, God is referred to as a rock, and that is a symbol of an unchanging, eternal reality, a solid foundation on which somebody could build their lives. So rather than pursuing all those voices that change with the shifting winds and tides of time, she leans into a different voice. The God who is a rock. And on this day, she sings a song that pictures so much of what is to come and reveals so much truth and reality about the character and the nature of God. But where would she have the opportunity to lean into that voice? And boy, I'll tell you, if there's any good reason for us to start the day with God's voice rather than all the other voices out there, I think she clues us into something that helps us to establish a foundation that we hear more than just the voices that are around us every day. And on this day, she talks to some of the powers that be in pretty direct ways. "Talk no more so very proudly. Let not arrogance come from your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed." In other words, he's going to judge everything right. "The bows of the mighty are broken, and the feeble bind on strength." And what is she telling us? God works through the excluded, not just the included. At a time where the loudmouths and the bullies were holding sway, and wouldn't a time of chaos be the time when those who were strong in every way that we can think of strong, being literally strong, wouldn't they be the ones who would pull all the strings and make everybody else do their bidding? and just be in charge of everything. But she says, no, there's a greater reality than that. And there is a God who works in ways that are often very different than the way that this world works. And God works through the excluded, not just the included. Look at this. He raises up the poor from the dust. In those days, the poor were on the outside looking in. He lifts up the needy from the ash heap. Ash heap is another way of saying the garbage dump, to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. There's a God who works in ways that are different than the way that this chaotic strength is everything, leverage all of your power. And that's often just the way that it goes. But she says, no, there's more going on. In God's economy, things work different. This image here about God raising people up made me think of something that I became aware of a while ago. Maybe you've heard about it. It's called the landfill harmonic. And in the country of Paraguay, there is this garbage dump. And after a while, people discovered there are children who live in the garbage dump. They're orphans, and they survive in this garbage dump. Well, there was one man who decided he was going to do something about it. He's the man on the right here, and his name is Fabio Chavez. And he was a musician and familiar with music, and he decided, you know, what are we going to do with these kids? I mean, they're living in the middle of squalor. And his idea was, let's create a symphony. Let's create an orchestra. Well, where do you get instruments? Instruments are expensive and they're hard to come by. So what do? Well, the man standing by him, his name is Don Gomez, and he had never even seen an instrument in his life. And so Fabio describes the instruments to him. Don Gomez would go into the garbage dump and he would find items and turn them into instruments. And you see, there's an oil drum that becomes a cello. I don't know what turns into, you know, the guitar there. There's a couple violins and things, and they decided to invite the kids to experience music. And that movement grew, and they've traveled around the world. And the Landfill Harmonic has opened for the likes of Stevie Wonder, Metallica. That would have been interesting. I don't know if they did Enter Sandman there or what. For Popes as well. You want to hear just a little sample of what it sounds like? Check this out. That picture, I think, has a lot to say in this day. Because I think in this day, there are many people who would view themselves as being on the ash heap and thinking that it's a day of the powerful and the influencers and the strong and all the kind of different ways that we would define that. And if you have kind of positioned yourself in the place of the ash heap, you got to recognize that there's a God who works in ways that are different than this world. And he works through the excluded, not just the included. And if you have placed yourself on the ash heap, he wants to transform that experience for you. But that is not how God works. That might be our experience in this world, but there's a God who wants to lift you up. And if you have consigned yourself to that place and you have written yourself off and you wonder where your value comes from and what it all means, there is a God who says, you matter to me. You matter. And you have not been consigned to live on the ash heap. Hannah's a woman who hadn't met the expectations, who's lived most of her life not meeting up to the voices that were so prevalent in her day. And in response to that, she prays this prayer about a God who works differently than this world often works. She also helps us to know that God is in control even when the world is out of control. Look at what she prays. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them he has set the world. Where would she get an idea like that? She has leaned into the truth that comes from God, that what we see every day and what we experience is not all that there ever is, that there is a God who is bigger than what our eyes see, than what our news tells us, than what the future trend lines look like, that there's a God who ultimately will bring all things to a conclusion of his choosing. And so faith chooses to trust in the God who is sovereign, who is in control, not just living day by day with the emotions that come through all that happens around us. She also sings, God works through weakness and not just strength. Check this out. He will guard the feet of his faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in darkness because there's another day coming. It's not always going to be the way that it is. For not by might shall a man prevail. He will give strength to his king and exalt the power of his anointed. She's talking about David is just about to come on the scene. But she also uses this word anointed. And that is not just sort of a spiritual sounding word that we maybe struggle to understand. It is a very specific word that she uses on purpose. What does it mean? It means Messiah, the promised one, the anointed one. She's leaning into the promise that God has made that one day he's going to come in the flesh. And for her, that was in the future. For us, it's in the past because 1,100 years after she sang these words, Jesus came and Jesus left heaven and he chose to become excluded so that everybody could be included in what God was seeking to do to bring people to himself. And Jesus heard the voices of culture in his day, and he was mocked by them on many occasions, even by the judgmental spiritual voices that resisted him. And he actually took on the position of weakness and dying a criminal's death on the cross, which was a sign of defeat. He turned it into victory. And ahead of all of that, there was a woman who put her hope and her trust in what God was going to do. We have the opportunity to look back and say, and he did it. Our hope is in him, especially in times of chaos. Now, after all of that, you'd expect things to get better, right? But in reality, things get even worse. Check out this list. Eli's sons get even more corrupt, abusive clergy, not a new phenomenon, sadly. The ark is captured. You know what that is, right? That's where they place the Ten Commandments. It's that box in the Raiders of the Lost Ark that when you take the top off, it melts Nazis' faces off. And leaders die. And Samuel's sons are out of control. Israel asks for a king despite warnings. It's not going to end well. Well, we don't care. We want a king anyway. It doesn't end well. Saul starts a downward spiral, very insecure king, and there he brings a lot of sadness on his nation. And there are ceaseless wars. This is like an 1100 BC evening newscast, right? Oh, man, if you thought it was bad yesterday, look at what's happening now. And what's the person to do in the middle of times like that? Times of chaos. Well, let's fast forward again. And here's what the Lord said to Samuel, who is now a man. How long will you grieve over Saul since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? That didn't end well. Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided for myself a king among his sons. A couple things here about life in challenging times. How long will you grieve? Life was not great at that moment. Life was hard. And with hard things in this life, there are times we need to grieve. There are times we need to process things. But here's what this is saying. There's also a time where that needs to end. And we need to get back on our feet. We need to get going once again. And specifically to Samuel, it says, fill your horn with oil. And that sounds a little bit strange to us, but that was symbolically in ancient Israel, the sign of the next king being recognized. So is it all over? Is God done? Is he out of ideas? No, there is another king. God is still at work. This is going somewhere. And so get involved in that. Get engaged in that because God is still up to something. And then what? Go. Don't just sit there. Get involved. Get engaged. Make a decision. Make a commitment. And so let me ask you this question. Where is God saying to you these things? How long will you mourn? Something's brought you down. Has it been long enough? And is it time to get up and move forward? Fill your horn with oil. God is working. God is moving. How can you and I join him in the things that he is doing? Because that's what he was up to next, to raise up a king of his choosing. God is at work in your life. How can you join him there? How can I join him in my life and go? What's the decision we need to make? What's the commitment we need to carry out? What is the line maybe that we need to cross? So let's wrap it all up with this question here. What is my next right step? And in days that many people define as chaotic, unpredictable, uncertain, what's a person to do? What is my next right step? Could it be that maybe it's to cross the line of faith and trust in Jesus? Could it be that maybe it's to enlarge the circle? I've shrunk it way down, but I need to get beyond myself and be involved in the things that God is doing around me and the lives of the people who are around me. Is it making the commitment to get connected with other people and not journey alone? Is it to just step up and maybe get involved in what God is doing in one way or another? What is my next right step? There's different voice that we can hear in times of chaos. It's cultural voices, relational voices. There is also the voice of God that invites us to follow him. Would you bow your heads together with me as I pray? So God, thank you for who you are at all times. And God, maybe especially in challenging times, we need to lean into you all the more. And so again, we ask that our confidence would be in you and not in ourselves, but knowing that there is a God who is powerful, who is sovereign, who is on the move, who is at work, who is redeeming, rebuilding, and restoring. God, how can we follow after you in all the right ways in a day like this? Would you teach us that, each and every one of us? And may there be a deep sense of confidence in who you are and the many things that you are doing. Lead us in the direction, God, that draws us closer to you and helps us to join you all the more. And we ask it for your honor and for your glory alone. So we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.